What is up? You're listening to the 3&D podcast. It is draft day. We were recording the day before, but as you listen to this podcast, it is draft day. And the Grizzlies have made it even more exciting for us this year because they have moved up and may not be done moving up. We're going to talk about all the rumors, some prospects that we love, and we've got more guests coming your way for this draft special that we have going on. Joining me as always is Ben Hogan. Ben, it's here. It's finally here.
It is still here, but it. I wish I could just fast forward to when it actually starts because, man, there's been just so much going on. So many rumors. Are the Grizzlies moving up? Are they staying pad? Are they going to acquire some more first rounders? They trading guys? I mean, there's so much going on. It seems like the Grizzlies are like the most active team, or at least rumor-wise, as the draft day has approached.
Yeah, so real quick, funny story. Our kid starts his daycare that he's going to next week, which is just my best man and his wife. They got three kids. She's going to keep Levi for us, and we need to get over there to see them, talk through some logistics as far as, all that entails. And they invited us to come to dinner tomorrow or tonight, draft night. And he's like, I get off work at 5, but y'all can come over before I get off and I'll cook and do all that. And I was like, well, it just depends on what time on Thursday. And they're like, yeah, well, what time's your son's birthday? And I was just like, 7 o'clock, which is true. I'm not lying. 7 o'clock is his birthday. Or not his birthday, his bedtime. His birthday is this upcoming month. So as long as we get out of there by 6:30 and get home, not only will we get our son in bed on time, we will be home in time to watch the draft. And I am lucky to be married to somebody who is excited to watch the draft as well.
That's good because my baby's bedtime is also 7 o'clock, but I don't think my wife really cares about the draft. She'll ask me afterwards, like, who's still on the Grizzlies? You know, she'll ask me that. She kind of waits till the season starts and then she picks her favorite. We went to the Grizzlies' first game last year when John Morant's first game. She immediately, much to Joe Mullinax's chagrin, she picked Jay Crowder as her favorite Grizzly at the time. She's like, he's the oldest player on the team too, so I can feel that, you know, because we're
pretty sure my wife liked Jay Crowder too, so they got the same kind of taste. It looks like, and that's a good question that she asked. Who is still on the Grizzlies, because that's what we can talk about. Like, we can jump in with the rumors that we heard, and I'll start with the Washington Wizards one. And all this one was is that there's a report that came out that the Wizards had mentioned players that they were interested in this this off season, and it's kind of weird because some of the players aren't even free agents. But right. Two of the players on the list were Grizzlies, and it was Dylan Brooks and Justice Winslow. And then Parker Fleming had to go and put Twitter in a tizzy by saying, oh, you add their money together, guess who that equals? Bradley Beal. Well, obviously, you're not getting Bradley Beal for Justice Winslow and Dylan Brooks. You're going to add a lot more to that. And I don't think where we're at right now, I'm not sure Bradley Beal is a swing the Grizzlies need to be taking. Now, if the Wizards want to talk pick 15, we can talk. But I loved the whole bill on bill movement, but it seems like now's just not the time. What do you think?
Actually, I like it. I wish they would trade for Bradley Beal, but I understand that you're going to have to give a lot more than just Dylan Brooks and Justice Winslow. I mean, they may be liking those guys, but that doesn't mean that they're liking those two dudes for their superstar. So, I mean, I get that, and I don't know what all it would entail, and the way the Grizzlies are moving up in the draft, I don't necessarily think they're looking to trade that 10 pick, or they're not moving up in the draft to entice the Wizards to trade them Bradley Beal. They are moving up in the draft to try and get the player that they want. And as much as I would like to see Bradley Beal in a Grizzlies uniform next season, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't either. One note on what you said, though, somebody brought up a good point that the Eagles moved up twice and went and got Carson Wentz. So I think the Grizzlies are trying to acquire some more assets to get up even further in the draft. I don't know that they can get to 3 do they love Suggs at four? The whole thing is there's a lot of smoke screens out there. Kleiman works in secret. Have they talked to Suggs? Do they secretly covet him and what he can bring? We don't really know. Sticking with Dylan Brooks, though, another rumor that came out was that the New York Knicks were interested in Dylan Brooks and sent multiple offers that included a first-round pick plus more for Dylan Brooks. And I have a hard time believing that the New York Knicks sent this year's first-round pick plus more for Dylan Brooks, and the Grizzlies said no.
Yeah, I mean, we know the Knicks don't like first-round draft picks. I mean, they went how many years in a row without having a first-round draft pick, so that's not surprising. The fact that the Grizzlies, if this happened, the Grizzlies said no, that's what's surprising to me. I think that you have to listen if that's what's included, but I just don't see the Knicks giving – I mean, I see the Knicks giving away their first-round pick, but I know it's under a new regime when that was all happening, but, you know, some things don't change.
Yeah, they got, what, two picks this year? They got theirs and Dallas's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're gonna move. You know, all the rumors are saying that this draft's gonna be a lot of trades, perhaps the most ever. Big names on the move. You know, who knows? The other rumor, I'll let you get the details on this one, was the Brandon Clarke rumors.
Yeah, it just seems like he's available. Like I think it was Matt Moore, HP Basketball on Twitter. I think he put out there that he's hearing that Brandon Clarke is being made available by the Grizzlies for trade. And my question is, like, what's his value really on the trade market? Like, we see his value probably higher than pretty much any other fan base, especially because we paid a lot of attention to him in his rookie season. And we're like, you know, he dropped off a little last season and the Grizzly fans aren't really worried about, whereas I think other fan bases might be. I think NBA front office is a little smarter than that. I think they realize what's going on. They realize that he's a good player, but I don't know how much more he can grow. And that makes me wonder exactly what his market value is out there and what the Grizzlies are willing to take back if they are trying to shop him around.
Yeah, and where I saw him linked was to Golden State at 7. So you give up Brandon Clarke in 10. And you'd come back with Kevon Looney and 7. I don't see why Golden State would want 10. Like, they've made it very clear if they're going to trade the pick, it's because they don't want to pick and they're getting the pieces that they need to win right now. Sure, Brandon Clarke is a good piece for them to help win right now. I saw somebody mock a trade that it was like Tyus, Grayson, and Kyle Anderson for Wiggins and pick 7. I think that makes a lot of sense for the Golden State Warriors. Like, you can get 3 quality NBA rotation players for the price of just Andrew Wiggins and that pick of a young player that wouldn't probably crack your rotation in a championship year. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's an interesting thought at that. Clark's value, I think the teams know, like, last year's just a weird year. He had some injury. It was a COVID year. They're going to look to his rookie year and be like, all right, this is the kind of player we can get. I think he still holds some decent value, probably the fourth best value currently on the team behind Dylan Brooks' contract, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Ja Morant. He's probably right up there with De'Anthony Melton on value. I don't know if you saw this rumor, but I saw that there was – possibly a conversation of Eric Bledsoe and John Conchar to the Sacramento Kings for Buddy Hield.
I don't like that. We don't need another – I don't know. I just think that you can do more. I don't think they need Buddy Hield. I mean, I know that was kind of like – people were talking about him last year, but he takes a lot of shots. And he doesn't make a lot of shots. And I just – you don't need a ball stopper in this team. I know Dylan, you would argue that Dylan Brooks is one. Yes, so is. You don't need 2 ball stoppers on this team. But I just don't, I'm not for it.
Buddy Hield is Dylan Brooks without the defense.
Yeah, more or less, yes.
Yeah. All right, so those are some of the rumors that have come out since our part 1 episode that came out on Tuesday. I'm sure several more are going to drop as soon as we're done recording this podcast. I'm sure something's going to happen. But we're going to move on. And we're going to look at some targets for at the 10 spot for the Grizzlies. We kind of mentioned it a little bit as a trade broke. But we've had some time to really think about it. Ben, we're going to assume that Cunningham, Mobley, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs, and Scotty Barnes are all off the board for sure. So in that range, Kevin O'Connor has Bouknight, Kuminga, Mitchell, Sengun, Cam Thomas, Josh Giddey, Franz Wagner, Trey Murphy, Moses Moody, and then Corey Kispert is that, I guess, 6 through 16 range in the draft. The smoke that's out there is that the Grizzlies are really tied to Josh Giddey and Franz Wagner. Do you believe it? Do you think it's a better fit? What are your thoughts on that 10th pick?
I mean, I do believe it to a point. It seems like Wagner's a guy that the Grizzlies front office would love. And Giddey, I mean, I just don't necessarily see the fit. I don't understand why you would bring him in. He's a point forward, I guess you could say. He can handle the ball, but he's still got work to do. Wagner, you can put him in. He can plug and play. You can put him in the lineup immediately. You can put him in the rotation, immediately. I get that. But as I said on part one of the NBA draft preview, these two guys don't move the needle for me. It's kind of boring. I like Moody. I like Bouknight. Mitchell, I can get behind. I think he's going to be gone by the 10th pick. I love Cam Thomas. I just think 10's too early for him. He's a scorer. I mean, that's what he does. He goes out and gets you buckets. And I don't think he would be drafted as a starter. And you don't take a guy when the Grizzlies – I mean, I just don't think that you take your sixth man off the bench at the 10th pick.
Yeah. So
you're looking for the third guy.
Yeah, yeah. So Giddey, his player comp is Kyle Anderson. Well, we already have Kyle Anderson. And we have a Kyle Anderson that can play defense. Giddey's not going to come in and play defense right away. Franz Wagner is interesting to me. Joe thinks that he's more valuable since he's grew 2 inches from 6'9 to 6'11. Whatever. It seems like he's got the most all around game, but I don't understand why he wouldn't be a top five pick if that's true. Maybe because his ceiling, maybe he just has a really high floor and the ceiling is just moderate. He's got some Danilo Gallinari comps. Moody, he's comped with, and I love these two players, Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby. Like, I would die to have either one of those two guys on the Grizzlies. And so if those are the comps, Moody seems like the obvious choice to go right there because he's exactly what this team needs. Cam Thomas is comped as a Terrence Ross or CJ McCollum. You would take that on the Grizzlies too, but like I'm with you, like 10 just seems too early for Thomas. For me, if we take somebody like Sengun, have you watched film on him? Like, I watched him play defense. It looks like he's always, like, leaning on his heels and he's about to topple over if the wind blows.
Yeah, I mean, I know that on our draft board, I think you were you wrote up about him. You're about not liking him. I mean, I don't think that he seems to be the guy that fluctuates the most on draft boards, on mock drafts and everything, because no one has a good feel for him. But, you know, Sacramento, they're the team that's most likely to probably take him. Yeah. But that's just how it seems. I think with Wagner, he's probably the closest thing to a sure thing in this draft besides, I guess, the top four. So that might be why. And I understand what you're saying about top five, but as we've seen time and time again in the NBA draft, a lot teams draft on potential too. And it's not just whether or not it's a sure thing, but I do think Wagner might be number five on a sure thing in this draft. And that's probably why so many teams are linked to him, including the Grizzlies.
Yeah. I don't know. After the top three, you know, who's going 1 through 3, nobody's squeezing in there and that's not changing. What order is debatable. Really between 2 and 3, we all pretty much agree that Nate Cunningham's going to go 1. My prediction is that Jalen Green's going 2 and Mobley's going 3. And then Suggs Suggs could go for. There's rumor that the Raptors like Scotty Barnes, which doesn't make sense because of the players that they have on their roster already. If they're going to lose Kyle Lowry, Suggs is who they need. But after pick four, who has a freaking clue? Like, this is nuts. So we're kind of in the same range here. You know, we like Moody, I think, is a number one option. Wagner seems like a number two option. But I've seen drafts where Bouknight, Moody, Wagner, and Mitchell are all gone, and we got freaking Giddy at 10.
Yeah, I've seen that too. And I've seen just maybe one of those guys still on the board. Moody is the one I've seen most slide past the Grizzlies, and they still take Giddy, which I would be pretty disappointed and pretty upset. I'll give him a shot, see how it works out. This front office has allowed me to give them the benefit of the doubt when it comes to something. I'll give them a chance. I'll give the guy a chance before I immediately rip it apart. But I think the rope's going to be short on a guy like Giddy.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, he's same as you. He doesn't move the needle for me at all. So let's talk trade up.
Okay.
The if it works out, the Grizzlies are able to trade up like they're rumored to. We were wrong on episode one. The Magic do not have the sixth pick. They had the fifth pick. Oklahoma City has pick six. Golden State has pick seven. The Magic had pick eight. The Kings are at pick nine. I believe all those teams are in play for the Grizzlies to deal with. I believe that Toronto could be in play for Grizzlies to deal with. The package will be a lot more than it would be, say, to get to five. I think that if they make this move, it's going to be for either we want Bouknight or they've got some intel that Moody's about to go and they're going to try to jump a team and get him first. That's the only scenarios that I really see as a possibility, unless Kleiman comes out of nowhere with some big swing and lands something crazy with that 10th pick.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of have – been talking with every single one of those teams and have something somewhat in place on what are you looking for this pick? Okay, we'll see what can happen. And then when the time comes, if they have to, they may pull the trigger. I don't know what the odds are on the Grizzlies actually staying pat at 10, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit if they end up not picking at 10.
Yeah. I would give it a greater than 50% chance that the Grizzlies are not going to be at 10. Here's a scenario I'll throw out there. Say it falls in a way where all the guys that the Grizzlies were interested in trading up for are now gone. They couldn't get a trade to get up. Is 10 enticing enough for Houston to send us 23 and 24?
Well, say you're the Grizzlies and you like Duarte and you know that he's not going to be there at 23 and 24. What do you do? Do you take him at 10 or do you draft somebody that you know that somebody right behind you wants, and then you kind of hold that person, that player hostage to try and get what you want from them and then take Duarte? I don't know. I mean, that's a tough decision, but it sounds like the Grizzlies have four guys on their radar that potential be at 10, and that's the four we've been talking about, and that's, you know, Wagner, Giddy, Bouknight, and Moody. And I don't see all four of them being off the board at 10.
It's possible, but yeah, I don't think it's likely. I think there's going to be a surprise in the top 10. These GMs are playing it close to the chest. These leaks that come out are by agents. These leaks that come out are designed to be smoke screens to throw people off the trail. Who knows what's going to happen? And we're right now about 25 hours away. A lot can happen between now and then. And I think a lot's going to happen on that night as well. So moving on to the last thing before we have our guests join us on the show, Ben, Is there a guy in the back end of the first round that may slip or is projected to be around there that you're like, all right, let's package a player and pick 40 and let's move up and get a guy?
I mean, I think the obvious one's Josh Christopher. That's, you know, Ja likes him. You make your superstar happy. He's been linked to the Grizzlies, and I mean, there's already been talk about moving when the Grizzlies held the 17th pick, maybe moving back and getting this. Heck, Cam Thomas drops far enough in the 20. I mean, he's, you know, he's projected. Kevin O'Connor has him as number 9, I believe, on his big board, but most mocks have him between like 19 and 24. If he's sitting there like 23, 24, Houston, you could probably get one of those picks from them. And I would love to have him if you end up with him in the draft. I know he's young and he's got some things to work on, but you get a guy that can score like that out of the draft, I would love it.
Yeah, for sure. For me, if we're gonna try to get a guy like that, it's somebody like Christopher. There's JT Thor, AU Dosunmu from Illinois can score. I think you're going with a guy that you trade back up into that, like a Jaden Springer, maybe even you can go get just a guy that can go get you a bucket. You can if you don't take the risk on the front end, like if you don't go for the Giddy and you get the Moses Moody or somebody like that that you know is going to probably pan out, you can take a shot with the second guy that you go up and get and swing. Zaire Williams, Josh Christopher, one of those guys. But if you're going and you're going with taking a shot like Giddy, you might look more sure thing like a Jared Butler in that back end, Trey Mann maybe, Miles McBride, those kind of guys. I know it's been reported that the Grizzlies have had a conversation with McBride, 6'1 point guard out of West Virginia, who has been comped to none other than Javon Carter and Drew Holiday. You'll take that kind of player for sure. It's interesting. We don't know what's coming. We don't know that the Grizzlies don't buy their way into the second round and take a third player. Like we really have no ideas. So we are obviously wrapping up our part two of this draft preview. And in this part two, we have two more guests to bring on the show. Make sure you follow along with us tonight during the draft on Twitter. Multiple of our writers will be on their personal accounts, but we'll also have a DBB Spaces going as well from the main account. Follow along, interact with us. We'd love to get your reactions when the pick happens. For sure, but we're going to take a quick break right here and bring on our next guest. All right.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Joining us now is Drake Yuyu. He is a member at Pro Insights, a former front office member with the Sacramento Kings. He is a NBL champion over in Australia, played with James Ennis, former Memphis Grizzly James Ennis. Drake, man, thanks for coming on. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk hoops. It's always fun when, you know, especially this time of year, talking draft, talking prospects. Summer is always a fun time of year in the NBA. So appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks for coming on. The first thing I'm going to ask you is, we've kind of seen a little bit of a shift when it comes to the draft. Used to, you always would hear upside, and guys would be drafted based on their potential and their upside. We've kind of seen a shift of more guys that stayed 3 or 4 years in college are being taken. The Grizzlies, prime example of that. You know, they took Brandon Clark. Do you think that more teams are going to kind of follow suit in this, or do you think that there's still going to be a bunch of teams that draft based on potential?
That's a good question. I feel like the my answer to this is, you know, every GM and decision maker has a different timeline. Every team has a different timeline, and some teams are in win now mode and are looking to add pieces that can play right away. And others feel like OKC, for example, I think has, you know, a time frame where they're looking out a couple years and can kind of take that gamble, let's say, on a project that might take a couple years, who's a couple years away from being ready to contribute. So, in the past recent years, I feel like in this year's draft especially, you're starting to see a lot of upperclassmen who were told they wouldn't be drafted last year and have kind of shot up the boards this year. It's kind of a risk tolerance, I think, with decision makers at the league. And again, like kind of looking at see where your team's at and figuring out those needs.
So in terms of one of the draft things that people pay attention to, draft age, do you think that is a bigger factor than it should be, or does draft age really matter that much?
I think it's personally, I actually like older players. I think they're a lot more reliable. You know what you're getting. You have a better idea of who they are. And these players, there's a level of maturity and understanding of their game, more of an acceptance of like really understanding the role that they'll play at the next level. And so they have a little better grasp on reality. And physically, I think they're, a little, obviously a lot more developed and mature. And so you look at a guy like Desmond Bane is like the perfect example who he's a guy that was ready to plug in right away. And I think that you look at this year's draft and guys like Corey Kispert and Chris Duarte, kind of more mature. And especially like from a coach's standpoint, coaches are much more willing to throw a guy in there that they feel more comfortable and confident in. And so it's funny, over the years, I feel like there's been like almost an undervaluing of guys being knocked for their age. And I think that's actually like a way for teams to kind of actually see value in the draft. And, you know, I know a lot of these analytics models will hurt a guy or kind of hold it against him, his age. But again, like for me as a decision maker, I personally tend to lean more on like, what can I bet on this player to do sooner rather than later? And so I think that the age is not necessarily a hindering factor for me when evaluating guys.
Is there a guy in this draft that, you know, you see that guys are undervaluing that could possibly just shoot up when it comes draft night, or I guess tonight when they're taken?
Yeah. There's a couple. I mean, Trey Murphy has kind of jumped on boards within the past couple of months. I would say he's climbed from where he originally was. Another guy that I've been really intrigued by recently is Nashawn Hyland. These guys that like I could see projecting, or guys that I can project into playing NBA roles. And so whether it's a guy that can come off the bench and kind of be a microwave scorer for you, or like a 3-and-D mold like a Trey Murphy. Herb Jones is a guy who I love, like utility guys that are versatile and can guard a variety of positions. You can find like a Jericho Sims somewhere in the second round that I think will be a really reliable backup center in the league. Those are a few of the names that kind of stick out in my mind, along with some others in the second round. But when I was working with the Kings and running our G League team, that was like my wheelhouse, was trying to find these like under the radar. We were fortunate enough to find guys that were either late second rounders or undrafted that end up being two ways and finding success like the Gabe Vincents and the Wenyen Gabriels of the world. So I do think that that's kind of a sweet spot, and that's the fun part of drafts and evaluating all together, is just trying to find those diamonds.
So say you are in the front office of the Memphis Grizzlies with pick number 10. Who's a guy that you're whispering in the ear of Zach Kleiman saying, this is the guy that you guys need to take?
So at 10, there's two guys I think that stick out in my mind for Memphis. I've heard a lot of the Josh Giddey rumors, or I've seen a lot of them. And Josh is one of my favorite guys, players in this draft. The thing that really blew me away was his actual size. I didn't realize he was legitimate 6'8". I had the chance to fly out to Australia and go watch LaMelo that year he was playing over there. And watching Josh, you know, you can kind of see a lot of the same playmaking and the way he reads situations out of pick and roll, his ability to pass off the dribble with either hand. He sees the game at a very high level for his age. And so when I look at your guys' roster, I think that, like, adding another playmaker alongside Ja with that type of size, like, he does kind of have a similar, now I look at like Kyle Anderson, the way I kind of looked at Josh Giddey was kind of in the mold of like a Joe Ingles and a Tyrese Halliburton, that type of, like, he's just a basketball player who I think will only continue to get older or continue to get better as he gets stronger. So I like the Josh Giddey pick, and another guy that I'm super high on that I don't know if he'll be there. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, but Davion Mitchell is another guy who to me, like, embodies that grit and grind personality. I think he's tough as nails, can guard either guard position, and I think he's one of those older guys that I think still has some upside, and at the next level with more space, I like his shot making ability, his shiftiness. So two-way player, I think he kind of, both those two guys I think would be great fits in Memphis.
I don't think I've heard anybody mention Mitchell to Memphis, which to me, that means it's a chance, because there's a lot of smoke screens being thrown out right now. Who likes who, and what Memphis is going to do. They're definitely not done. I know they got some guys on the wing that need to move because they've got a ton. And they had 13 guys that could have played in the rotation last year. So we're going to wrap it up with this, let you go. Do you think it's possible that both Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley are off the Kings roster at the end of the night tomorrow night?
I think it's very possible. I think there's definitely some traction there, just with, you know, people I know that are still in the league that are probably more on the end with the intel side. But I do think that there's some truth to that Buddy Hield to LA stuff. I think that, you know, as much as it pains me as growing up a Kings fan, I do think that Buddy to the Lakers makes the Lakers better. And then I also do think that, I like the idea of Kuzma and possibly Montrez coming to Sacramento. And it's one of those trades that I could see being a win for both sides. But with Marvin, I think it's just a matter of, like, Sacramento trying to, I think there's enough water under the bridge to where both parties could probably use a fresh start. But B, I think they're probably trying to shop and see, like, what the actual value for him is and try and maximize that. So whether that's for a pick or whether that's for another young player, who knows. But I do think there's a good possibility that one, if not both, could be moved by tomorrow. So we'll see.
Yeah, I like that Buddy for Kyle and Montrez, especially if you lose Rashawn Holmes and you do move Bagley, then you filled your 4 and 5 right there. With a guy that can score, and then we all know what Harrell brings to the table. And then that opens up the door for more playing time for Halliburton next to Fox. I think that's a good fit for sure. Drake, man, I appreciate you coming on. If you would, just kind of plug where people can find you on Twitter and the Pro Insights and what all y'all got going on.
Yeah, well, you can follow me on Twitter. I'll occasionally be posting random draft thoughts, but it's at Drizzy_UU22. And then, yeah, check us out on Pro Insight. We've got a really talented team. Matt McKay's built a great program, a great platform, covers everything from grassroots to college to pro. And so, yeah, we've got a good product. I'm actually repping the sweatshirt right now, the light bulb. So if you see us out there, give us a shout out. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having us on, Matt. It's always fun.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Yes, you guys go check him out. Go give him a follow. Go check out Pro Insights as well and Matt McKay. We will be back after this break with our next guest. Joining us now on our Memphis Grizzlies Grizzly Bear Blue draft preview podcast mega episode that we have going on with all of our guests. Ben, we have a rising star on Twitter. This man has this account on Twitter. I think it's like a year old, maybe. And he's already like tripled the amount of followers that I have on Twitter. And I've been doing this thing since like 2014. I'm talking about the Twitter account run by Nathan Grubel called Draft Deeper. His work has been very good. His interaction with the fans on Twitter revolving this NBA draft has been awesome. Nathan, thanks for joining us, man. How are things going?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me and for the glowing intro that I probably don't deserve, but you're awesome, man. And I'm excited to talk about the draft, but also about the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies were really like the first NBA team that I was actually like a fan of back really? In 2011 with the Grit and Grind Grizz. So yeah, I'm excited for this one.
That's awesome, man. So let's jump into it. Let's go with your deep cuts, your sleepers. Who are some guys in the draft that maybe you think are being overlooked or are going to be a steal later on?
So I'll give you two guys who I actually talked about on a guest appearance that I did yesterday with Chuck from the Chucking Darts NBA Draft podcast. I'll talk about Joel Yai, who is a 6'5 guard out of Gonzaga, who was your very traditional bring your lunch pail to work type of role player who is going to do whatever it takes for your team to win on offense, whether that's initiating offense out of pick and roll sets in a backup role, whether that is offering off ball movement. He's arguably the best backdoor cutter in the entire draft class, if not the best. And then he can hit open jump shots to an excellent rate. And he shot over 57% from the field this year. So he is somebody who offers enough offensive versatility in a backup type role too. If you're looking for like an early to mid second round selection, and you're looking for somebody to just come in, give you a spark offensively, someone you can hand the keys to and trust to run a second unit, I would definitely look his way. And then another guy who is a sleeper, I don't understand why he's a sleeper. Somebody who, if I was like the Oklahoma City Thunder, for example, with like pick 16 or 18, who have multiple first round picks, they can take a shot in the dark, or heck, I would have even said he'd be an interesting selection for you guys in Memphis. But Isaiah Todd has gone so far under the radar at this point. And I would rather take a flyer on somebody like him than a lot of the other guys you could talk about, like late first round, who you would think is more project type developmental players. 6'10 forward, has a very pretty jump shot for somebody his size. He can shoot it off movement. He can shoot it off the catch. Has one of the better fadeaway jumpers out of the post, I think, out of somebody in this entire draft class. So that's just another interesting dimension to his offensive attack. And then being the athlete he is, arguably one of the top five athletes in this class, the switchability and the versatility he could potentially offer on defense is also really enticing to me. So those are two guys who I could target like early second round for sure, maybe even a little earlier in Todd's case. And I'd feel really comfortable about the type of player that I could get for that kind of value.
Yeah, I know there's some guys at GBB that love Ayayi. I like him too. I think he'd be like after the Grizzlies. We're going to talk about the trade that just went down, the Woj bomb that just exploded everywhere. The Grizzlies are at 40 now. Ayayi wouldn't, if he's still there at 40, I think he'd be an excellent pick. Isaiah Todd seems like one, if I'm not mistaken, like his senior year of high school, he was viewed as a one and done lottery type guy. Like he was going to be a top 10 lottery pick. I'm gonna throw this question to Ben. Ben, do you think some of these guys going to the G League, like Nix and Todd and even Jalen Green to an extent, them not being on TV and national, you know, media and being able to be seen as much, you think that's hurt their stock a little bit?
I do. I mean, I'll be honest, some of the guys on my big board, G League guys, I had them lower than a lot of the other guys that did their big boards. And it's simply because I didn't see them that much. And I think they kind of also fall out of everybody's memory because they're always talking about, you know, the college guys or the high school guys that, you know, you see the one and done and then they go to the G League and they just somewhat forget about them. I think that's a case as well. So yeah, I mean, for sure. And I got a real quick question on a follow-up on the sleepers. What are some first round guys that you're just not completely sold on yet?
So a guy that's now come up in multiple conversations again with Chuck, that guest appearance, but I also just recorded a podcast with Coach Adam Spinella that I'm very excited to release to my audience. Somebody I asked him about in detail was Josh Giddey, because he's gotten a lot of this lottery buzz. People think he's a point guard at his size because of some of the things he did with Adelaide. And I'm not sold on a lot of those same skills translating to the NBA level, really wrapped around the lack of scoring ability that I see from him out of the gate. Like, I'm not confident how he's generating points on an NBA floor from day one. I question the jump shot mechanics on both his pull-up jumper as well as his catch and shoot jumper. I don't think he's a good finisher around the basket, because he's not the bulkiest of guys at 6'8 at his size, which that's something he'll add to his body as he's in the league. But I also don't think he has great natural touch around the basket either. So you start to figure out someone who needs to leverage his playmaking as his greatest strength. Well, part of playmaking is also being a threat to score the basketball. And I just don't know how much of a threat he's going to be to take advantage of his strengths if he's not able to hit shots consistently from at least two of those three levels on the floor. So he's somebody I've had questions about. He has a lot of Joe Ingles comparisons out there. I think if you draft him and you're very comfortable with developing him as more of like a 4-3 type forward, and then you let him ease himself into more playmaking responsibilities, then I think he can be a very valuable draft pick and somebody who obviously I still have as like a tier three type guy, which on my board, that means you can be like a 1-4 starter on like a really good or a championship level team. But I think that if you bring him in as a point guard and you play him from that spot from day one and you hand too much responsibility to him, I just question the type of results you're going to get back. And we've seen in the past that sometimes when you give players too much responsibility out of the gate, it can stunt their growth a little bit.
I think it's a perfect segue. The Grizzlies are now picking at 10. They have moved up in the draft from 17 and 51 to 10 and 40 by way of trade with the New Orleans Pelicans. And Jonathan Giovanni kind of came out immediately after that and said there's some smoke around the league that the Grizzlies are looking at Giddey at 10. I hate that. I absolutely hate that idea and the thought of that. I'm hoping that that's just a smoke screen that the Grizzlies are throwing out there, like, oh, yeah, we're interested in this kid at 10. It makes no sense. I don't need another 6'7", 6'8 guy on the team that can't shoot. He's got a negative wingspan. I'm not sold on him the same way that you're not sold on him. I don't see how his game translates. He is very, very young at 18, one of the youngest in the draft. He's going to turn 19 in October. He could grow size-wise still at 19 years old. He's got plenty of time to develop, but I don't love it. Let's talk about pick number 10. We're talking Moses Moody, Book Knight, Franz Wagner, Corey Kispert, that kind of range for the Memphis Grizzlies now. Who do you still see still being there, and who do you think in that range would be a great fit for the Grizz?
You mentioned a lot of the popular names that are now going to be talked about with that pick. And those are really good names to bring up from an immediate reaction standpoint. I wonder if the Grizzlies may try and hit a little more of a home run with that pick and bet on somebody who has been mocked in that like 11 to 14 range. There's been some buzz that he's gained some traction with San Antonio. So maybe I think Memphis made that trade. I know you guys will talk about it. But I think Memphis mainly made that trade because there is somebody they like at 10 that they don't think they can get at 17 anymore. And two guys come to mind. Chris Duarte has really had his stock rise, and he's somebody who I thought would have been a natural target for you guys at 17. But if his stock is rising to lottery, then Memphis might have seen this as an opportunity. If we can buy ourselves into pick 9 or pick 10, take on a few contracts, maybe move one of those contracts, but then we get the draft pick that we want, he would be a very sensible selection for you guys. Is just the thing that I love the most about your team is that you guys have just stockpiled basketball players, and I love it. I love that approach. You guys are so deep. It's incredible to watch how you guys can bring like the 12th man off your bench and he's contributing like a seventh man. It's awesome. So, but the other guy would be Alperen Şengün. I really wonder if they try and hit like a home run with somebody like him. I know that he's gained some traction in circles like Charlotte and San Antonio. I wonder if maybe they were trying to leapfrog two of those teams right there in that range, and they could take a swing on somebody who offers so much offensive value. Everyone wants to talk about his defensive shortcomings and his quote unquote lack of ability to properly protect the rim in your most traditional sense. Well, you guys have Jaren Jackson Jr. back there to block a bunch of shots and offer length around the basket. So why not piece together that kind of a front court? You can develop Şengün, bring him along a little slower. If you guys keep Steven Adams, why not maybe take that approach? So I think it's probably actually going to be one of those two guys.
All right. So
I know a lot to unpack there.
I think Duarte is a reach at 10. I love him. I think he's a perfect Memphis Grizzlies player.
I would agree with you.
I saw him as somebody that if you really wanted to reach for him, you waited till draft night to see where he fit, where he was falling. Maybe looking at him to, you know, get up to Indiana's range at 14 and maybe take him there. I don't love Duarte at 10. I don't love Alperen Sengun either.
Oh, you're about to break my heart.
And look, but here's the thing. What's crazy is that you just brought him up, and Kevin O'Connor's been over on Spotify Green Room, and he mentioned him as a sneaky fit for the Grizzlies too. So here's what I need from you. Tell me how he fits on this roster when we already have Brandon Clark, Xavier Tillman, and Jaren Jackson.
So the thing that sets apart Şengün is that those guys are awesome in their own right. I support Brandon Clark. Xavier Tillman was certainly a surprise in my book in terms of some of the immediate value he brought last year and actually contributed to you guys having a little bit of playoff success there and getting into the playoffs. The thing that Şengün does differently is, number one, he offers so much more offensive value than all of those guys. Şengün is one of the best post scorers I think I've possibly ever evaluated. His footwork around the basket is pristine. When you talk about the idea of touch, he has excellent touch around the basket. And then he also offers a lot of playmaking versatility for you guys offensively as well. He's somebody who is very adept at high-low passing, whether that's passing out of the post, whether that's doing something around the elbow and getting somebody else the ball down low. So I think that out of all of the front court guys you have, I think that him and Jaren Jackson could pair so well together long-term. I mean, Jaren Jackson, like again, when you look at Şengün's faults, he ideally needs somebody who can help protect the rim from the weak side and also space the floor for you on offense. Like, that's Jaren Jackson's calling card. Like, let me ask you guys, do you think that Jaren Jackson is going to be a center at some point long-term, or do you think he's ultimately going to remain a power forward and you still need another big body down there? That could be Tillman, that could be Clark, or you could take a swing for the fences and get a potentially excellent offensive prospect like Şengün.
I think eventually Jaren's their five of the future. That's the way I think that they're going. And I think that's why they got rid of Jonas and then they brought in Steven Adams, who's similar fit, but I just think looking to the future, it'll be a Jaren Jackson at the five. Real quick, I'm not going to put you on – well, I guess I'm kind of putting you on the spot.
Put me on the spot, man. Come on, hit me.
Kevin O'Connor also put out that the Grizzlies could move up even more into the draft to maybe make a deal with Orlando or Golden State. And they're talking about for either Bouknight or Kuminga. Do you feel like either of those guys would fit better, one better than the other with the Grizzlies?
I think Bouknight would be a better fit than Kuminga. And Kuminga is actually another guy that I just talked about on the podcast that I recorded. And I've had some struggles with him because I just don't see the bankable skills that Kuminga brings to the table offensively in the league from day one. And you guys are now getting ready to be in playoff mode where you guys need to be able to plug in players. You know what they're going to do well. And you need to be able to have some kind of accountability from those guys offensively. I don't see that from day one with Kuminga, although in time he could be an excellent player. Bouknight does offer you a lot of versatility offensively off the ball. If the shooting changes are real, if he's improved his mechanics, then you get another shooter as well. But our good friend up there does not want more non-shooters on his Memphis Grizzlies. And I agree. I've watched the Grizzlies chuck up too many bricks over the years. I think you guys need better shooters. But I guess the last point I'll leave you with is, if there is a draft to ever trade up, use some of your assets to go up and get the guy that you want, it's this draft, because it's loaded, and you may not have another opportunity like this to get what could end up being a third piece around Ja and Jaren in another draft like this. So I would use the capital and move up.
Nathan, I appreciate you. This has been great stuff. You know your stuff for sure. If you do me a favor, plug your stuff. Where can everybody find your work? Just give it out there for all the listeners.
Follow us on Twitter at Draft Deeper. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get it, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. The content's going to keep coming. We'll have a live draft show on YouTube that night. And then I'll have a reaction pod that will go up sometime after the draft as well. And I'll be on social media, but after the draft, we'll take a little bit of a break over here at Draft Deeper. It's been a long scouting cycle, but I can't thank you guys enough for wanting to have me on for a plug. That's awesome. I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate it. Good stuff.
Yeah, man. Great work. Keep it up. All right. After we get done here, we're going to come back to our next guest. So you guys stick around. Now joining us on the draft preview megacast over here at the 3&D podcast is a friend of the show, a friend of mine, a friend of Ben Hogan's. We have Mr. Eric Hasseltine. Eric, what's up?
A lot, apparently. I go on vacation and all of a sudden we were trading players and making moves and all these crazy things. So you've got a child now since, and Ben's got one on the way. So tons and tons happening.
Oh, I got my child now.
Oh, congratulations. I didn't see that's how far removed I am from everything. What do we have?
A boy.
A boy. All righty. Yes.
And I got
an enormous... And you got a little girl?
I got a little girl on the way.
Oh, yeah. Another one on the way?
Another one on the way.
Good Lord, man. You guys are you guys are factories. And gluttons. Gluttons for punishment. I'm going to pick up my 9-year-old from karate. So wait till they get to that age and you just turn into a human taxi. That's basically what I am.
I hear you. All right. You mentioned the trading players. So what do you think about the reported deal that's been out there between New Orleans and Memphis?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was actually down in Orlando with my family, taking a little time away before things kind of get hectic around here with golf tournament. And then, right after summer league, it's going to be NFL football season and all that. So it was kind of an ideal time to get away. And boom, here comes the note. And I was like, whoa, that kind of caught me off guard. So the reported deal, obviously everybody's heard, is one that I think signifies that they're not done trying to make other moves, whether that's moving up in this draft and to what position, who knows. It seems there's a couple likely teams that could want to move either back or move off of picks. There's teams that may try to acquire more, who knows. Maybe you get a situation where one of the teams with two picks tries to move up, and then the team that gets the two picks tries to flip one of the picks and move back or gain more assets next year. It's hard to tell on these situations, but I think, if the reports are true, what it boils down to is, in my opinion, that they're looking at Ja and saying, we're going to take less of the unselfishness from you next year. And that's not a bad thing to have as a point guard. But I think they realize with Jonas Valanciunas and Dylan Brooks and potentially a healthy Jaren Jackson, barring some major shakeup, you got three guys that kind of need the ball early in the game. And what we saw, I think, a lot last year was there was a lot of first quarters where Ja Morant was just a facilitator. And to be quite honest, guys, he's too good to be just a facilitator. He's not a Jose Calderon. He's not a guy that just goes and gets you 8, 9, 10 assists, a Mark Jackson type point guard. And Mark Jackson was one of the best facilitators of his generation. He basically looked to set everybody else up. He got his points when he got them, but he wasn't ever looking to score. And in today's game, point guards more so look to score than ever before. Chris Paul is the closest thing we have at that level to a throwback, but you look at the great point guards in the game today, and what do? They put the ball in the bucket and they get guys the basketball. We're seeing guys so many nights with 30 points and 10 assists, where back in the day, that was just an absolute rarity. Steve Nash was winning MVPs, not by scoring 30 a night, but by setting guys up, by shooting an incredibly high percentage because he picked his spots, so to speak. And they don't want Ja to pick his spots, because as we saw, he can go for 25 and a quarter in the blink of an eye. And if he's too busy trying to make sure Jonas is happy and Jaren's happy and Dylan's happy, and even Kyle Anderson, if that's part of the picture, if that was the roster you were running with, or whoever may be that other starter in that position, whether it's Desmond Bane or Grayson Allen or whatever the roster looks like, you don't want him taking a backseat to anybody. So I think the recognition is that Steven Adams is not Jonas on the offensive end, but he's a little better on the defensive end, especially in the pick and roll. And he's a comparable rebounder. So you get a guy that doesn't really need the ball in his hands on the offensive end, is content to set monster screens, clean up misses. And then on the defensive end, he plays the pick and roll better than Jonas does defensively. And that's not to knock Jonas. He's a very, very good player, but he rebounds at a comparable level. So I just think they're saying we want Ja to take that next step forward. And it's harder to do that when you have one more of an offensive base center than a guy that just defends and rebounds.
Leading into the draft, there's always smoke, there's always rumors, but in your memory, is this the wildest lead in to a draft that you've seen with the Grizzlies?
I think it's close. Obviously the deal for Mike Conley was a big one, because you essentially ended up picking up a couple of really young players that, you know, Grayson Allen wasn't young like most rookies are, because he stayed 4 years at Duke, but you had a guy in Brandon Clark fall back, and, you know, all of a sudden you got Brandon Clark, Ja Morant, who you got with your pick. And then, you know, you made the trade for D'Anthony Melton, and all of a sudden I looked at that summer league roster and I was like, my gosh, when this Utah deal actually goes through, these guys are going to be a beast. And that's the year they won it. The last year there was a summer league prior to what's going to happen in August in Las Vegas, assuming all goes off without a hitch. That was a little crazier to me, just because of the magnitude of what Mike Conley meant to the franchise. Jonas was beloved in the short time he was here, but this isn't one of the core four. So it's crazy, because now you're thinking, all right, what do you have up your sleeve next? And if we know anything about this group with, you know, Zach Kleiman and Tayshaun Prince and Rich Cho and Glenn Grunwald and the rest of the front office personnel that put a lot of time and effort into this stuff, they don't just sit and wait. They're proactive. Their phone's going to ring. And I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, and I'm not trying to say everybody's available, but I would be shocked if they're not at least listening to anything that is being said on the other side of the line when the phone rings, unless the name Ja Morant comes up. And then that's a deal stopper right there. Anything else, they'll hear what people have to offer. And I have faith that these guys have enough now experience, because let's be honest, they weren't the most experienced group when they got rolling. Rich Cho had experience, Glenn Grunwald did, but Zach had been more of a counsel type guy, more of a handling the contracts and the legal aspects of thing. But he's such a sharp guy and absorbed so much information doing that he was able to hit the ground running where a lot of guys may not have been able to. Well, now they're into year three. And year three is, you know, a chance for them to now go, okay, we know what our goal is, what our vision is, and where we want to be. And we know the guys that we believe can help get us there. And as I've said on many broadcasts about being aggressive as opposed to being passive, I would much rather have guys committing fouls, committing turnovers with aggressive play and learn to fix it, rather than being passive and not committing those fouls or turnovers, but also not taking your shots at opportunities to make yourselves better. So I think they run the front office that way. I think they're willing to put themselves in a position where if they make a mistake, they'll own it. And mistakes inevitably in any front office will happen. No front office has ever run the gamut and been perfect. The guys have missed on draft picks. Guys have missed on free agents. Guys have missed on signings. You name it, they've missed. Everybody from the Lakers to the Celtics to the Spurs to the Bulls. I mean, we all know the misses. And that's kind of what you get held accountable for. But they're not afraid to make those mistakes. And I don't want to say the previous regime was afraid. I think they had a goal to try to keep the playoff run going as long as they possibly could, knowing that one day it would eventually end, but they didn't want that day to potentially be on their watch, which it ended up happening. And then now they've all kind of gone their separate ways. So it's wild, and it could get wilder, and it could surpass what happened with Mike Conley, because we all kind of knew that. But it was just a wild situation. Shoot around, everybody was on pins and needles. Mark's not there in Oklahoma City. You realize it's the end of an era. And at the end of the day, Mike doesn't get dealt. And I know that was a little bit frustrating probably for him and his camp at the time, because they wanted an opportunity to play for a bigger prize. And Mark was going to get that opportunity in Toronto. They had the horses to run that race, and they improved, I thought, with the moves that they made. I remember picking them early season saying, I don't think people will realize that DeMar DeRozan turned into not just Kawhi Leonard, but also Danny Green. And they didn't give up a lot to get that piece that can really help them come playoff time. But for Mike, it was tough. And I think in his camp, it was a little bit frustrating. But, you know, it's one of those situations where he handled it like the professional that he is. But then we went into the offseason and you're like, yeah, there's no way that this is going to stay this way, because the guy wants an opportunity to not have to be part of a rebuild right away. And, you know, we've seen situations in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers having the clout to kind of lay out the front office in a press conference for not making moves and not treating guys the right way. And Mike didn't necessarily do that, but the frustration can be there.
Yeah. So I had to echo what you mentioned about the Grizzlies taking phone calls on everybody except for Ja Morant. And it seems to be that right now, with the rumor that came out that they had conversations with the Cleveland Cavaliers about going up to three. And obviously you're not doing that without Jaren Jackson Jr. being included in that conversation. And so it's definitely an interesting route going forward. I agree with you. They're definitely not done. There are more moves to come. Hollinger's reported that they've been shopping their wings. So here's my question. We'll end it with this one. Who is the type of player or a guy that you love that would be the best fit for what Memphis needs going forward?
Out of the draft or just in general?
Out of the draft, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you move, you know, again, I hate dealing with these rumors, and this time of year you get a bunch of them, because ever since before the internet was as popular as it is and before we had cellular devices where everybody was racing to their Twitter app or their Instagram app or whatever app they're posting on, you know, back in the day it was all just online. And I'm old now, so I can say back in the day. But there was a guy in Chicago named Sam Smith, and I remember one year he had Shane Battier traded 10 different times and none of them came to fruition. That's just kind of what guys do. They throw these ideas out there and say, hey, this works. Let me check with my contact with XYZ team and see if they think this would be something they'd be quote unquote willing to do, or someone from that organization contacts or any organization contacts a reporter and says, hey, we would be really interested in this if that we could get them to bite. Not necessarily that there's been conversations, but then it's like leaked. Oh, these guys are interested in so-and-so. And now all of a sudden, teams are going, well, they're interested in them. Maybe somebody else is interested in them. So a lot of it can be cat and mouse. I think the type of player you need is the guy that Jaren, I think, was before he got hurt in the bubble, that stretches the floor, that protects the rim, that's long and athletic. But you also need that rebounding and toughness inside. You need a little more consistent, experienced three-point shooting on the wing. Kyle Anderson obviously had a much better season last year, but you need someone that guys are going to respect. And there's a reason Kyle was open last year. Now, towards the end of the year, they had to go back and do that. But if you watched any of the playoffs, the guys who never get in the game for the Jazz, whenever Kyle shot, made the stink face and put their fingers across their nose and, you know, kind of waved like he stinks, let him shoot. And I was like, yo, man, like that's not only A, disrespectful, B, you're wrong. You haven't read your scouting report. So that tells me you're not paying attention to the fact that the guy shot a career high from three and his shot was much better. But that shows where he ranks in people's, you know, minds as a three-point shooter. So if you could find someone that can stretch the floor like that and open up the lanes for Ja Morant, that's there. I mean, we've heard rumors that Washington is looking to move Bradley Beal, and we've heard that name potentially towards the Grizzlies in the past. Is that a contract you want to pick up with 2 years and I think $70 million left on it? That's a big question. That's a big ask of a team to take that on and to not know if Bradley Beal really wants to be there. You know, that's a lot of money if a guy gets here and says, you know, I've been in this kind of situation before. I really want to go to a team that's a top four in each conference. And that's kind of where NBA players have their power. So you need a scoring pop. I think you've seen that Dylan Brooks, if he's part of the equation moving forward, can be your defensive guy if he's willing to fully embrace that role, seemingly the way he did in the playoffs. If Steven Adams will help him there, and you can add some athleticism and shooting at that three or four spot, if it's not going to be Jaren, if Jaren's road to recovery still takes a little bit longer, that's what you're looking for. Now, if you want to go try to find that second true star, then you may, if you don't think Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be that second true star, you may have to move on that contract quicker than most people would have liked. Teams have done it before. It's not always a popular decision. But if that rumor mill churning and says, hey, at three with Cleveland, you can either get Evan Mobley or Jalen Green. That's again, what's the likelihood of that? Is Cleveland going to back off another young star to move back and maybe pick up extra assets moving forward? They've got three talented young guards, and I don't know that they need anything other than a big moving forward. And so who knows what goes on there. And so, you know, again, it's hard to say, but I think they're trying to consolidate the roster. And instead of having Taylor Jenkins look down the bench at 12 guys who can give him quality minutes, I think they feel like he needs to look at eight, maybe a ninth guy that can give those quality minutes. And your 7, 8, 9 guys need to take big steps forward. And then your 10, 11, 12 guys can take steps back. And maybe those guys that filled those roles find homes elsewhere where they can play more significant minutes for whatever team that they're a part of at that point. It's really difficult when you have that many guys, and it was a blessing when guys got banged up. But look at what we saw in the playoffs. Utah goes to basically three subs and then a rotation of a fourth, whether that's Niang or Mie Oni. But their three subs are Jordan Clarkson, Derek Favors, and Joe Ingles. And if somebody gets hurt, George Niang steps up. But after that, if you can tell me anybody from the Jazz bench that you know and understand their game, then either you are a diehard Utah Jazz fan or you are a liar. Because even I watching them throughout the time, I'm like, who are these guys? Like, I've never heard of some of them. And I had seen them in summer leagues. I mean, I heard the name, but like, I don't recall them. They are guys that they picked up through good scouting and two-way deals and free agent contracts, but that's what you want. And you want to sink the majority of your salary cap into your first 9-10 guys. And at 9 and 10, it's more the majority really is in your first eight. And then you got two guys that are young and maybe on lower, like, lower tier contracts because they're still in their rookie deals or they just didn't get a ton of time. So
yeah, definitely. I think consolidation seems to be what the deal is going forward for them. I think it's the right thing to do. As always, Eric, you nailed it. Some incredible insight. We definitely appreciate you coming on and doing this with us.
That's why I keep coming back. You guys keep giving my ego a nice little chuck. Nailing
not
it
a problem at all,
precise on point. I appreciate that very much. You know, I go home and my 9-year-old tells me I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but he's also the kid that is like saying, no, Dad, they are up by 7 and that is too many possessions to come back from with less than a minute to go. This thing is over. And I went, okay, bud, I believe you. And he was right. And he'll go up and brush his teeth. Was I right? I told you I was right. Right. And I'm like, dude, you're 9. And if you want to live to see 10, stick that toothbrush back in your mouth and pipe down. But he follows it the way I did. So it's fun being able to now kind of share this stuff with him. And so, I enjoy it. And I'm happy for both you guys and keep up the great work.
Appreciate it, Eric.
Yeah, for sure. Eric, best of luck to you going into another season as the radio voice for the Grizz. Hopefully it's another playoff run and this team adds some fun pieces to make it more exciting going forward. Ben, anything you want to throw out there before we end this draft preview podcast that's spanned a whole week for us?
Yeah, man, I'm just I'm excited for it. I don't know what's going to happen, and there's a lot of things that could happen between now and, I guess, 24 hours from now as we speak. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to talking about it afterwards as well. Should be fun.
Yeah, for sure. We want to thank all our guests that came on this part two episode, Nathan Grubel and Drake UU, and of course our close friend Eric Hasseltine. It's draft night. You guys enjoy it. We'll have obviously plenty to talk about in the next episode. We'll take a week off from doing all this, and Ben should be back on a normal sleep schedule at that point, closer to normal.
Real quick, head over to, I'm sure you already saw it on Grizzly Bear Blues, but make sure you check out my betting guide for the draft tonight. Make a little extra coin while you're watching the draft. Makes it a little interesting when the Grizzlies aren't picking.
That's right. Go check it out. Ben is your official betting guru of Grizzly Bear Blues and the 3&D podcast.
Later follow. At your own peril.
Yeah, at your own peril. The 3&D podcast will be your official fantasy and betting podcast of Grizzly Bear Blues as well, led by Ben himself. So check that out. Enjoy it tonight. Hopefully the Grizzlies do some more exciting stuff. Give us plenty to talk about. I'm sure they will. Again, thanks to all our guests, and we will catch you guys in a few weeks.